listening to the Nerds Assemble podcast.
Welcome to episode 274 of the Nerds Assemble podcast. I'm Emily.
Hi, I'm Paul.
And I'm Paul, aka Retroid.
This week it's a gentle episode compared to the previous episode.
Which was traumatic.
And yet somewhat freeing at the same time. And we're just going to be discussing what we've been up to. Yes, we get it's December. I have yet to watch a Christmas film at the time of recording. There's still plenty of time.
That'll be Die Hard then.
Die Hard 2. I really need to get my hands on Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. Because that's a set at Christmas. Of course, you do an Iron Man 3 rewatch just to get all the Favreau in. You know, just...
Getting in all the Favreau.
Well, he's got at least two Christmas movies there with... Kiss Kiss Bang Bang and...
Oh, that was his as well.
Iron Man 3.
Okay.
I think it is. I'm pretty sure it is. Let me just double check that. I've seen a lot of talk, though, about the Christmas films that Netflix has put together this year. Let me see. Is it a Favreau? Is it? No, I'm wrong. It's a Shane Black. Sorry, everybody. It's fine.
Anyway,
still Christmas film. But yeah, so it's Gremlins.
Anyway.
So everyone's been up to stuff. I have reached the point of rewatching Hannibal where I do not know what number rewatch I am on. There we go.
I mean, it could literally be like 15 times at this point.
No, I don't think it's as high as that.
Okay, 8.
Maybe.
No, there's no maybe about it. It's definitely somewhere between 8 and 15. And this is like one after another.
It's like just so soothing to have one in the background whilst working out or knitting. So soothing. So soothing.
I've kind of caught so many glimpses of it that I'm pretty sure that I've managed to piece together the entire series just out of order.
Yeah, but I do have to point out to you the most important salient points of like episodes when you are around.
Have to point? No, yeah, there is no to. Have to.
I have to.
There is no like. Oh, I need to explain this to
when,
Paul.
Or when those Hanagram moments are particularly on point.
But there's no have to about it though. That's what you do, like, ooh, ooh, pull, watch this. I know, I've seen it 7 times. It's the only bit of the episode that I've seen.
I'm on season 1 at the moment.
Right. I've just had a weirdness with my browser.
Oh.
Basically, I've not heard about the last minute because for some reason Zencastr logged me out.
Oh, okay. So basically, we're still recording, but we estimate that I've watched Hannibal between 8 and 15 times.
Yep.
Fucking hell.
And then Paul's pretty sure that he knows most of the show now, even though he's rarely seen any episodes all the way through.
Just kind of absorbed it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And that basically I'm finding Hannibal the most comforting show to watch whilst exercising or knitting at the moment. I personally think, as I commented on Twitter the other week, that my rewatching of Hannibal this year is, I think, completely on par for The Eternal March.
Yeah.
A show about cannibalism and epic levels of pining. Of course it's on theme for 2020. It's probably on theme for 2021 if we're being honest with ourselves.
That's... Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm on Hannibal season one at the moment. So yeah, am I watching anything else? Oh, I did manage to break out into a bit of variety and say to Paul, let's start watching Schitt's Creek. So we have been watching, we've watched a few episodes of Schitt's Creek here and there, still in season one. It's reminding me of, it's like a mix to me between like Arrested Development and Dynasty, but as in the Dynasty remake, not the original.
You can kind of see that.
That's a weird mix. I have not seen the Dynasty remake, which I am calling that because I am British.
Oh, please, I've been accused of being Canadian and American by South African people before, so it's great.
Yeah.
Just so.
But anyway, I mean, yeah, I think you're on point with that, because obviously you have, like, the family, the Roses.
Yeah.
And none of them are particularly likable, and they're all kind of lacking in some respects, like Arrested Development. And there's a certain amount of irony behind their, you know, like Arrested Development. But they kind of come from the money aspect of a lack of regular life skills.
Like that lack of regular life skills and the level of fortune they were living at previously is why the dynasty parallel for me comes in. So yeah,
and obviously because the kids in the family are adults as well.
Yeah.
So, with their own kind of lives and...
I mean, you say their own lives, they don't seem to have had much life even prior to this, which I think is the fantastic irony, is they act like they had lives before everything went to shit. But actually, we're slowly learning they weren't really that much of a life, really, really much of an existence, really, as a facsimile of existence. Not really living it beforehand. But it's early days. We're only, what, 4 episodes in?
Mm-hmm.
So. But, yeah, no, so there's been some Schitt's Creek.
We watched the first episode, but then we got distracted by shiny things.
What, which particular? And,
I can't remember what it was, but it was... Right, you know, we've run out of something else. Shall we watch an episode of this? And, you know, the first episode seems all right, but it didn't immediately grab. And then, of course, you know, other shiny things.
That's fair. I mean, the amount of TV series that kind of start out that way, especially in that kind of format as well, when it's like the characters are all designed to be kind of unlikable so that they can be built up over the series.
It needs a massive kind of commitment from the start to be willing to allow that to happen.
But I mean, I remember like Community, the first episode was like...
Oh, yeah.
And then, you know, as the episode kind of got on, it got really good.
Well, I had the same reaction to Parks and Rec. We watched the first one or two episodes, and it's like, yeah, it seems all right, but not sure. And then, of course, it's become one of, you know, favourite series.
We binged season one a few weeks back, rewatching of Parks and Rec over Amazon. Mostly because I'd spent most of the day playing... I've been playing The Last of Us 2, The Last of Us Part 2. Did I restart? Yeah, I restarted it. And I'm still sort of dipping into it here and there, but it's a heavy game to play, you know? It's not something you go into for funsies, and you don't want to play it too late because you're going to need something on the other side to just kind of lift the spirit a little bit afterwards.
Yeah.
Or kind of, like, tampen down the tension that has slowly ratcheted up inside of you as you try not to die. And that's just playing it on easy. Like, I decided I just want to play it for the story rather than challenge it at the moment. And it's still like, oh, God. And probably, I think the main thing that's making it not too nerve-wracking is that I'm always good with resource management.
Yeah.
So if I can kill stuff without using resources, I will kill stuff without using resources, quite frankly. Yeah, Last of Us Part 2 is... There's been some interesting moments in it. I'm still not... Am I allowed to spoil the first one? It's been a while.
What, the first game?
Yeah. Go on. Yeah.
I can't remember if I have done it many episodes ago.
It came out on PS3 and...
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So like, the thing that really pissed me off about the first game was how Naughty Dog had decided to convey the resistance that Ellie has to the disease, to the spores, to this whole parasitic existence.
Yeah.
Because their idea of like trying to find a cure using her was basically to kill her and cut her open. And there's me thinking, that is not how you research a cure to somebody from somebody who is resistant to the disease. To any disease.
Yeah, but...
I know, plot device, like, prevented fridging or whatever, but it was just kind of, like, so frustrating, because it's like, that's not how it works! Oh my god! Because...
Well, it is after a civilization has fallen, but even then, it's like, surely read a book and oh, hang on!
Yeah,
Chapter 1 is not crack open the one... in a subject that you've got.
They were in a goddamn hospital. Like, there would have been some libraries and journal shit there. I mean, they had people there who knew enough at least to do, like, autopsy tip methods and shit. It's just, it eternally pisses me off. And because I'm not that far, I'd say probably maybe a third of the way through the game. I don't think I'm half. I'm going to say third, or it might be half. But I've yet to see anything address this thing, this one aspect of the entire story of the first one that just pissed me off. So there's that going on.
Yeah, a darker thing to do would have been to be like try and breed the whatever.
Oh yeah, which they could would have been done that.
Like
yeah, really she was, icky yeah,
and whatnot.
Yeah, but... she was underage in the first one as well. Like.
Yeah.
Or basically kind of the whole like hacking off bits of her.
Yeah.
In a cage. Could have done that. That would have given like the level of or having a I don't know, like hooked up to some kind of thing where she's constantly having like spinal fluid samples or something. Like something gross and like basically battery farm like. Like that.
Basically, they should have used their imaginations more about, you know, how they would have kind of used Ellie, but have it actually make sense.
Yeah. So, yeah. Anyway, I'm enjoying the story so far. I perhaps understand why there might have been... I muted everything to The Last of Us Part 2 when it originally came out this year.
Is it still muted?
On my Twitter, I don't think I put a time limit on them. So yes,
There was a YouTube channel that I did like watching, but sometimes it had like clips from.
Basically, like once that, and look, then I once I watching it because once it, I finish the game, those. you can start watching that YouTube channel again.
Yeah.
But that'd be a Christmas jobby, I think. Finish the game.
Right, is that when you're
season's gonna greetings?
Is that when you're gonna have time to just?
I mean, last month I was writing a novel. Oh yeah, I wrote a novel last month, or at least 90-ish% of a novel, maybe a little bit less. It was National Novel Writing Month, aka NaNoWriMo. The minimum goal to win National Novel Writing Month is 50,000 words. I wrote 50,037 words. I was about at the tipping point for the final bloody act because it was a supernatural horror. The thing will need massive rewrites because it's not written in a way that I'm particularly happy with. I like the core concept, but I would be rewriting it a lot or adding in a lot of detail, which would actually probably expand the word count well over like 68 or 70,000 words.
In a little side note, but whenever I hear anyone about, you know, talk about expanding, the word count, I just think of the way, maybe not you, but I did, and a few other people I knew, it just expanded stuff for work at school or university and, college when it was, you have to write a page on this. So it just pad the bullshit out as much as possible.
You see, I don't have an issue meeting word counts or even staying within word counts. It's just that obviously I had like a speed issue and not have to be complete. So anyone who goes into National Novel Writing Month thinking they're going to have a perfect novel by the end of it, by the end of November, is a fool. But you definitely have something that you need to do rewrites and edits on.
That's not going to happen.
Yeah. I used Scrivener to write it, which is actually locally produced. It's it's by Latte and Literature. And they're actually based in near where we live. And their software's like quite popular among people writing long fiction, like novels and stuff and short story compilations. And people writing non-fiction that's quite lengthy as well. Because it's got a lot of... It enables you to write in a non-chronological way. So you can basically, you can actually turn scenes into draggable and droppable bits of content that you can shuffle about and do things like write like summaries on like cards, on like a card sheet to say what this particular scene is without having all the detail and stuff and various other things that are really helpful. And I purposely used it, even though I have like LibreOffice, just so I could, if I got stuck on a scene, I could easily move backwards or forwards to write something else to try and keep that word count growing over November. Mm. It's also going to make rewriting a hell of a lot easier. So I managed to win NaNoWriMo.
You've defeated it.
I've defeated it. Second time that I've managed to do it. First time was back all the way back in 2013. So I was quite happy about that. Have I done anything else? So that was my November, really, was just trying to write like 1,667 words a day to meet that. There was unfortunately there was one day it was the day of the Supernatural finale where I was unable to write. I was just like, no, I can't do it. I'm just too tense about what's coming. So I didn't get the achievement for managing to write like 30 days in a row because the Supernatural finale just killed my creative impetus. But then like the Friday after having watched it, I was like, okay, well, I need to keep writing or else I'm going to suddenly not make this word goal for the whole month. So I had to like double up and like write enough for the previous day I'd missed and then that day as well. So I don't know what video Paul's watching beside me, but I'm slightly terrified. I think we should all be terrified. It's like a Nerds After Dark video, Paul.
Goodness.
I was on Facebook.
Right.
Okay, just... something... Mm-hmm. Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the place where, female nipples aren't allowed.
Face what?
Book. B.
Oh, right.
B.
Okay.
B.
Okay, right.
Anyway, I succeeded in NaNoWriMo. I felt so unconfident writing that versus fanfic. It's just, I found it easier to write 50,000 words of fanfic in like a month this year compared to that. So that was NaNoWriMo. What else have I been up to? That's first. More Hannibal.
Mostly Hannibal.
Mostly Hannibal. I've been reading...
How much Hannibal?
I've been reading a really good fanfic the past week. it's an AE by... I need to find it on Archive of Our Own. It's really, like, long fanfic. You know, proper, like, just chocker. And it's kind of like, it's, and you got two parts. And okay, it's a work in progress, which is like a mistake sometimes. Because you can't guarantee that it will be finished, you know, in time or ever.
Yeah, not just talking about fanfic and such, but anything. We've all had the, oh, this will be great when it's finished, and it never gets there.
Yeah. I'm just trying to find it a minute. I'm looking through my bookmarks. Come on, bookmarks. Come on. Oh, is it that? No, that is not anything to do with Will being an incubus.
What?
Exactly. It is... Am I going to have to go into my Kindle? I might have to log into my Kindle. I don't want to have to log into my Kindle if I can avoid it.
Why? What's there?
So much fanfic, Paul. I managed to get that Kindle with even a far less fanfic on it, but a lot of fanfic on it, through customs twice back in 2016. I don't know how. And there was some pretty explosive stuff on it back then.
Sorry, explicit or explosive?
Both.
The explosive is the reason for the explicit tag.
Yeah. I think we have to boot up my Kindle. Gosh darn. I have got it bookmarked. But so it's like, it's an AU where Hannibal is still a therapist, still a cannibal, still a chip. You've been trying to teach me how to pronounce his title, Paul.
Chesapeake Ripper.
He's still the Chesapeake Ripper. But
it's Chesapeake. I don't care what the Americans say.
Chesapeake Ripper. But Will is actually, he starts off 16, but he's actually, rather than being even anywhere near the level of settled that he is in the TV series, he has a lot of psychological issues. And it's a story about like Will basically coming under like Hannibal's care for a while as his therapist, kind of like mandated like therapy care and stuff, and terrible things, and Will learning that Hannibal is just a ripper and a cannibal, and then the usual, because it is a trope of the show of and the series of basically Hannibal helping Will have his becoming. And being molded into that role of killer and being comfortable with it. And so the first one, it's the first fic is called that, which is called Madness, which is by, where's her name? Or their name? Renee Hart. Part one of A Danger to Himself and Others. So I finished that yesterday. I was just like, oh my God. Sped through it last week. They started posting the first part in June last year. No, not last year. Sorry, this year. They started posting in June this year and they finished in August this year. And it's like 178,000 words. It's tiny. Keep in mind, the average novel is 64,000 words. And I'm reading the second part now where Will's like, I think he's like 20 now and he's in college. It's called The Sun and Other Stars. And yeah, it's just like, it's just insanely good. And it's not like, it's slow burn as well. And it's just insane. So I've been reading that. It's also really gory. Like, it's like slow burn and there's lots of murder and cannibalism.
Slow burn and lots of murder.
Yeah.
Slow murder, lots of burn.
Oh, and pining, obviously, because it's slow burn.
For the fjords, or?
There has been talk of running away to Europe in the part of the story that I got up to. That has been pretty much me for the past month. I mean, there have been other Hannibal fanfics, but those are what are sticking with me at the moment.
Oh, pardon me.
Oh, and on a side note, the fallout from the Supernatural finale continued and still and kind of got even worse after we put our episode up that then recorded it. So, in case anyone was wondering.
Why? What happened, Emily?
No, we're not.
What happened, Emily?
No, you
then
can...
why are you bringing it up if you're not going to say what happened?
Go on.
There was one of the translations for it into, I think it was Spanish, suggested that in episode 18, Dean reciprocated Castiel's feelings and said like a version of like, I love you too, in a way that was, due to various things, would have been romantic. There was that. There was poor Misha Collins trying to, like...
Damage control.
I don't know why he thought it was a good idea to wade into things. It wasn't a good idea to wade into things, because nobody else has. Not even the network. And then basically just a lot of anger at the CW, because it looks suspiciously like they're more than the showrunner. More than Dab being involved in... crap. So, I mean, the CW doesn't have a good track record for representation for LGBTQIA, so yeah. got worse. You can Google it. Just don't read the Mary Sue article by, was it Jess What's-Her-Face, because she decided that it would be a good idea to compare conspiracy theorist fans to QAnon.
QAnon.
Yeah. I mean, no.
Yeah. So don't read that article. Don't give them clicks. Everyone, like, I think Nerds and Beyond, BuzzFeed had a good piece. Even the AV Club, like, loads of other sites have really good pieces about it, just being like, what the fuck, about the finale and the last three episodes, basically. So go read that. The main Supernatural subreddit was a dangerous place to wander into, and still is, from what I can tell.
Everything's on fire!
Too many bros on there. It was just platonic. You sure?
Bless him.
Anyway. So. Oh, and I started trying to read a horror novel called The Boatman's Daughter by. How do I pronounce the name? By Andy Davidson, which came with. Because I've been signed up to the Abominable Book Club for a few months.
Yeah.
And I started trying to read stuff. It's hard. Trusting horror novels to read by people you've never heard of, because if you decide to read something by someone like Stephen King or even Joe Hill, who's obviously his son, but you kind of know what you're getting. But obviously,
yeah.
Abominable Book Club, it's like stuff by people you may never have heard of, and that involves a certain level of trust. And horror is one of those genres where it's like, I do love it. But I'm really picky about what I consume, basically.
I mean, aren't we all, really?
Mm. Paul, what you been up to?
I'm presuming you mean me.
Yeah, I would have said Retroid if it was Retroid.
That's true. So I have been playing a little bit of Hyrule Warriors, Age of Calamity.
Little.
What do you mean?
You've been quite a bit in a good way.
Oh, good.
I'm just gonna. Can I feign shock?
You can feign it. You'll know it's feigned.
Oh,
Even Callie is shocked by this. Hey, cows, are you shocked? Yeah, she's shocked.
Okay, so, yeah, I mean, much like with other kind of Warriors games, especially with, like, Hyrule Warriors, you know, it's basically running around a battlefield, attacking, like, thousands of opponents at a time, and generally having a bit of a grind, really. I mean, obviously, it's kind of set within kind of the Breath of the Wild kind of era. Well,
timeline.
Yeah, timeline. Because it's literally the age of Calamity. So when the Calamity happens, I haven't completed it yet, and I'm not 100% sure whether it's gonna be technically canon by Nintendo standards or not. But it does have the Breath of the Wild aesthetic down to a T, which is really actually nice. So yeah. It's not going to be one... If you've not played Breath of the Wild...
It's not going to make any sense.
It's not going to make any sense, and the look of it is going to look a bit weird.
Yeah.
But if you have played Breath of the Wild, this plays differently, but looks... very much on par.
From the bits that I've seen, because I've completed Breath of the Wild earlier this year, it does look like something that does tie in nicely with the story, like as a supplement at least.
Yeah. But like I said, I'm not 100% sure whether it's going to be canon, because, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what did... Oh,
no, I was just making a note for the... We did link out to a fanfic previously on the show notes, so I was just making a note for that.
All right, okay. Fair enough. What else? I have been doing work on my D&D campaign.
We're all going to die!
You're not all going to... You keep on saying
we're in
that.
A cave system at the moment! There were wolves! There's goblins! We're all going to die!
That sounds fine. Nothing could go wrong in a cave with wolves.
I mean, you're a party of like 9 people. It's unlikely that you'll die.
unlikely.
Depending on, you know, so like how much you want to brute force stuff, you know, so like whether you kind of... Yeah, I won't say too much.
I would recommend not trying to brute force the wolves.
Yeah.
Although
it's not going to go well.
Would make it probably would.
Oh, God, no.
It's like, I'm going to tear its jaw off.
My half-elf wizard, who's like a gender reverse of the character of Elaine from the Dresden Files, he's spending most of the campaign with the disguised self spell cast, where possible, so that his actions are not associated with his true identity, because the actions of the rest of the party can sometimes be very incriminating.
Well, I mean, it's D&D, so it's like you kind of end up making a name for yourself throughout the world.
I've heard the trend to be murder hobos.
Yes, but I'm trying to dissuade that.
And how's that going?
Mixed results.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, because there was one bit a good couple of months ago now where two of the players, because I kind of split them up into kind of groups. These two went to go on this one mission, and the others kind of, I can't remember what they ended up doing, but something different. So the two that went off to go on this other mission... basically had to kind of try and sneak into a camp, and they got caught, and rather than basically being like escorted off, they decided to basically just stand and fight. And I was like, okay then. And then basically I threw, I designed kind of a set amount of waves and kind of planned it out so that they could either, you know, kind of, you know, fail, or they could, you know, succeed, and it will be kind of epic, and, you know, making sure that basically the players have the, in essence, not railroad in them and have the option to do several different things. They stood and fought. They fought valiantly, but they were not successful. Rather than killing them, though, decided that basically they were kind of knocked out cold and then taken to another place.
They were arrested for all intents and purposes. Yes, yes.
That's when the DM takes pity on the stupid player, isn't it?
Yeah.
So you've done something disastrously stupid, so that instead of ending up as a smear.
Well, I mean, it's... Yeah.
Plot happens.
So I kind of felt a bit guilty because, you know, sometimes I throw stuff at the party and it basically, like, dies, you know, getting one hit off. And that's it. It's just like,
yeah. Oh,
that was a bit shit, actually, for a battle. And then other times I would kind of throw stuff at them and it's like, actually, this does a quite a bit of damage. have I gone too far? And I felt a little bit like that at the beginning when I did the cave system that they're currently in. But it's like, I know that they got through the first couple of battles fairly easily. Let's see how things kind of go with the rest of the cave. This might be interesting because it's really difficult to, you know... gauge exactly how well a party of nine people will do against certain levels and certain amounts of enemies, because it's not just a case of, you know, sort of like having, I don't know, like one big enemy for them to fight, because in essence it's still like nine turns versus one turn.
Yeah,
you know, and we found that when we did another campaign, we fought, was it Strahd?
Lestrade.
And we had like nine people on our party, and he went down quite easily.
One arrow in him. One. That was the only hit I was able to do.
Yeah, I think he kind of kind of took it out of me. Because I think he actually kind of grabbed me or something like that. And,
poor Kiefer Thief.
Yeah. And I obviously didn't die. Mm. I don't think I was even knocked out, but I was at least hit.
Yeah.
And yeah, I was like one of the few kind of people that were actually hit before Strahd went down.
I want to point out that my character goaded Lestrade before we got into their fight, explaining how pissed off I was with his treatment of us. Because he was an incredibly rude host.
Rude, you say?
Yes. So D&D, those continuing online.
Yes. For us,
obviously. Yeah, yeah. Even though we're all in Cornwall, and it's, you know.
Yeah, I can't wait for this fucking vaccine to come.
Not
that, you know, it'll actually kind of arrive for us for quite some time. If it will eventually arrive for us.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I've previously heard that the Tories are basically thinking of just, you know, giving the vaccine to, like, elderly people and those at risk and then leaving the rest of us to catch it.
Oh, NHS whatever. Workers might get it as well, you know. But, yeah. So,
but anyway.
I look forward to being able to play D&D in the same room as other people again.
Yes, because...
It makes it a lot easier.
It really does. It's a
remarkable idea.
Because obviously, you know, there are people that have kind of played it online all the time, which is absolutely fine. For a start, I've not been able to get Roll20 to work for me properly. There's always been some sort of issue.
Yeah.
Which is quite frustrating.
Even when we tried paying for it.
Yeah. And also, when you're actually playing online, you generally tend to have players kind of their minds wander and, you know, do other things if they're not constantly engaged.
Mm.
Like, whereas in you know, kind of proper room, you know, they'll be, you know, kind of listening to, you know, the person that's actually talking, which is usually the DM.
Also, I miss hanging out with the cat that lives at the place that we normally play.
Not the players.
No, but I miss just the cat. I miss the cat.
See, this is understandable.
Yeah.
Let's see, what else? Star Trek Discovery.
Oh, yeah. We're up to date with that.
I'm really enjoying it. Yeah. I mean, to be honest, I've enjoyed it from the beginning anyway. But, yeah, this season, it's felt interesting. It's kind of taken elements from the time of, like, the kind of regular Prime stuff. Like with, Next Generation, DS9, Voyager-type stuff. And kind of they've kind of included, like, elements here and there from it, and it's kind of been a nice kind of continuation of that, you know, timeline.
Also speculation about how things would evolve in a vast amount of time between where the normal series have ended and the... Is it almost a... How many centuries into the future is... Like season 3?
8 from Discovery's time.
So, like, 800 odd years, basically.
No, it's 9 from Discovery's time, and it's about 8 from Next Gen.
Okay.
All right, okay.
So, yeah, it's quite a while.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you kind of have, references to, certain other the TV series. Like, I think it was the, was it Temporal Cold War? That was mentioned in, like, one of the episodes.
Yeah.
That was obviously from Star Trek Enterprise. I think not last episode, but the episode before, you had Unification 3, which obviously kind of references, like, Spock, and also references Picard with the sect of the Romulan kind of female monks that kind of tied by themselves to Lost Causes.
That was one of my disappointments with that episode.
In what respect?
I just thought it was incredibly convenient who her representative happened to be.
Fair.
Because I just thought, oh, come on. you could have thought of a different way of doing that.
Understandable, yeah.
But yeah, generally, I liked it, especially with the getting Burnham to specify exactly what she wanted.
Mm. Yeah, and I think it was on Facebook, the Star Trek ship posting group, where it's like half the people are complaining because, oh, Burnham cries too much. And it's just like...
That's a normal amount of crying when you're not in a repressed society containing you within some kind of man box.
It's not just that, but I mean, it's also to do with the fact that, previously, kind of characters have cried because, pretend, like, deaths of family or from, like, other, tragic stuff. And it's like, how much tragic stuff has Burnham actually, had going on?
A lot.
Uh-huh.
And they are, centuries in the future, everyone they know or knew is now dead.
Yeah, long dead.
So, yeah, long dead. They're in
the psychological strain of all of this.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not like, whoa, we're on a shiny ship and we're in a different place now.
It's also like a case of you don't have just, you cry because you're sad. There's all sorts of different reasons why you'd cry.
Frustration. Anger.
Because you are so elated.
Mm-hmm.
It's another one that... Yeah, and it's just like...
Of course, the real star of Star Trek Discovery Season 3 is Grudge.
Yes. I'm 100% on board with that. I want him to have his own show.
But I saw a behind-the-scene photo, and there's two Grudges!
Which is just twice as good.
Yeah. They're so cute and fluffy!
Just massive cat.
Because they're, how do you pronounce it? Is it Maine Maine Coon?
Sister-in-law has one.
Mm.
And not as big, but he is incredibly floofy and very, very soft fur. He's a bit of an awkward bugger, though.
Oh.
I think partly because, partly grew up with a you know, just coming into teenage boy. So got a little annoyed with him at points, but they're actually best of chums now. But yeah, I think some cats just have that attitude. But yeah, absolutely beautiful cat and purrs really loud, etc., etc. Paul rates cats for the next half an hour. Just imagine that. And I'd like to say,
don't think that many people complain.
Yeah, you know, this cat is best cat, and all cats are best cat.
So yeah, so that Star Trek Discovery grudges the
yeah okay. So and I've
space
been,
cat
yeah. I've also experimented slightly with engraving vinyl.
Was it engraving vinyl or was new? Were you engraving acrylic, technically?
Yeah. Sorry, acrylic, not vinyl.
Yeah.
Which I think turned out all right, but since then I've actually discovered a tip from one of the, you know, kind of
so we can do even
channels.
More cool shit.
Yeah, it's basically because the issue was where I was kind of doing it on the cutting mat, it was kind of having difficulty kind of actually sticking it central on the acrylic discs.
Yeah.
The acrylic disc is basically like a round but 8 centimeter or so kind of plastic, see-through.
8 centimeter diameter.
Yeah. Kind of disc. And I was kind of sticking it in the, you know, kind of top left-hand corner. And I was, you know, kind of, I tried a couple of times where it's like, you know, tried engraving like words on it.
Mm.
And it kind of kept on being like too high or too far to the... you know, right or whatnot. But if you actually stick it dead center in the on the cutting mat, then it knows exactly kind of where it is, and you'll be able to kind of do it from there.
Okay.
So
there is a chance that people will be getting handmade gifts from us for Christmas. I say handmade, Cricut cut maker made.
Well, it depends on whether I'm going to have time to actually do designs and do the cutting.
It's fine. We'll be fine.
We'll be fine?
Yeah, we'll be fine.
Everything's going to be fine.
I'll get used to it.
You'll have to teach me how to do it. At least I'll have some confidence using Illustrator to make an original design.
Yes.
Unlike the people that make stuff in most of the videos.
Yeah, on most of the videos on YouTube with stuff.
They use like pre-done design files that are like SVG. And it's just kind of like, okay, but I would rather like make my own... At least typography ones from scratch.
That's the thing, to be honest, I would not have bought the Cricut Maker if it hadn't been for the fact that I can use Illustrator to actually make my own designs.
Yeah.
I would not have done that because basically you'd have to subscribe to like the Cricut Maker service in order to kind of download designs that, you know, a lot of the time are kind of not thematically like in keeping with our aesthetic
or of our friends' aesthetic, even family.
It's like, you know, a lot of the time it's kind of, you know, kind of designs for like cards and
that's the thing. The designs reminded me a lot of the pre-made like decoupage card shit that you see being sold in like craft segments on teleshopping or in places like The Range. Or, you know, basically, I mean, not to be disparaging to people who have card making as a hobby, but some of the pre-made stuff you guys have access to really looks quite...
Well, the thing is, though, is that it's kind of mass-produced as well, which means that, you know, it's a case of they kind of look very, very similar because their designs are, you know, kind of pretty much kind of cut and paste.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. I'm glad that I kind of don't do that. I prefer to have mine so that, you know, I can actually... design them myself.
So Retroid, what have you been up to?
So, well, let me just bring up the list.
This may take a while.
See, that's fine, isn't it? Well, first of all, I can't recall if I mentioned that I would replay Day of the Tentacle.
You have not mentioned, I don't believe, that you replayed it. When was the Tentacle originally released, and is it Lucas?
I've got the original release somewhere.
Okay.
And then tried it, you know, playing it around with ScumVM, you know, over the years. And then, of course, Double Fine got the rights back, and they did a remastered thing, which was great. And I bought that. And then they've been, well, the company has been bought by Microsoft, and the games have been added to Game Pass.
Okay.
So, what's this? I have Game Pass, and we've got a shiny, Xbox Series X in the house. Why, yes, I will play mid to late 90s point and click adventures on this shiny new next generation console. So, not much to add, other than if you are a fan of text adventures or excellent humor, I would, I can still heartily recommend Day of the Tentacle. It is still enjoyably strange, and it actually manages to have a female playable character who is just an excellent character. I really like Laverne.
Nice.
And I think it was one of the first things that I really paid attention to the way Americans say Bernard. And say, ugh. But yeah, do you know the general plot line of Day of the Tentacle?
No, I've heard of the title and it being quite beloved by many people many a time.
Well, it is a very good game. And the gist of it is there's a mad scientist who has created two intelligent tentacles. There's green tentacle and purple tentacle.
Uh-oh.
And the game starts off with green tentacle and purple tentacle coming across a toxic outlet from the mad scientist's lab. And purple tentacle drinks it. Uh-oh. And it gives him little armlets.
Uh-oh.
Which, of course, Purple Tentacle has always been a bit of a bastard, but now he's got arms.
Which means
he's going to take over the world. Uh-oh. And, long story short, you play three characters. There's Bernard, who's a stereotypical, nerd. With thick rimmed glasses, kind of 50s archetype of nerd, and his friend Hoagie, who is a roadie, and usually just talks about heavy metal stuff, and Laverne, who is their odd, weird friend, and through a plot device, you get sent back in time to. Stop Purple Tentacle from taking over the world. But you're sent to three separate time periods, and because the professor used a fake TV shopping diamond to power his time machine, you're stranded there until you manage to solve the puzzles to get back. So Bernard is stuck in a present day. Hoagie is stuck in America with the Founding Fathers.
Oh, dear.
Which involves various bits of vandalism to the American flag design. And Laverne is stuck in the future where the tentacles have taken over. And they're using... they've entirely taken over and they're using humans as, pet show.
Oh,
so, there's like a... human show, so, best dressed human, if they can dance and things like that, and, various other things. But, yeah, it's an excellent point-and-click game, so play that. Then I played Full Throttle, which is a far more kind of straight-faced, weird, alt-universe biker story.
But not Biker Mice from Mars.
No, not Biker Mice from Mars, but it's got things like it, hover cars and stuff like that.
Okay.
So it's a little bit strange. It's a little bit left field, but I quite like it. And the idea is that you're framed for a murder. Murder of this bloke who's been running this bike manufacturing company for years, and this new guy wants to take over and start manufacturing vans. You can't have that. They manufacture motorbikes. God damn it. So, yeah, there's all kinds of stuff with that. Like I say, it is a little bit of a weird one, but enjoyable. And I'm currently most of the way through Grim Fandango, where you play Manny, a Reaper, in the Land of the Dead.
I'm just... Fandango... Oh, God. I'm trying to spell it in our notes.
Yeah. Grim Fandango.
Yes.
And the gist of that is... You're basically a glorified, or Manny is a glorified to start off with, in a travel agent where he gets souls and then, looks up what they've done with their life and whether they're entitled to the best travel package to level 9 of, the Land of the Dead. And he thinks it's odd that he always gets, people who aren't entitled to anything, basically, so they have to walk, the rest of the way. And it turns out there's a conspiracy. And that, again, is a weird game, and I'm finding it a lot harder than the previous two.
So you not played... Because obviously Grim Fandango's been around for years, so you not played it before?
Yeah. I've played just a little bit of it. I think I got a Dave Internet copy.
Mm-hmm.
From someone, but I didn't get that far in it, and the world wasn't really grabbing me as much as the previous games, especially not Day of the Tentacle, which is just that's definitely the best of the three. But I've nearly completed it, and it's very sort of detective noir, but everyone's dead.
Okay.
And everyone's kind of a cartoon skeleton. It's also the first of the LucasArts graphic adventures that used 3D acceleration.
Mm.
So that's fine because they're kind of caricatured skeletons.
Am I right?
Clothes.
I'm kind of remembering that the art figure from Dango. He's got like a skeleton in like a white tux.
Yes.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. So that's the art style. It suits the technology of the time, but it's kind of nice that it's been rejigged and and enjoying it. But I would definitely rate that third. So as a whole, they've kind of declined, but they're still quite high up.
Yeah.
Let's see. So other things I've been doing. I remember mentioning Jedi Fallen Order.
Yes.
Yeah, that was rather good. I've dabbled in a bit of Star Wars Battlefront 2, because that's also in Game Pass, seeing as the EA titles got added. Now, here's the thing. One which was added a few days ago, and I've downloaded it, and I'm enjoying it so far, is Control. But I remember you didn't...
But that was partly because I died a lot, and the loading times in the game were so atrocious that the amount of death that I was having to deal with was not fun.
Yeah, that's one that I think me playing it on the Series X is definitely going to help with, because I would say the most I've waited for anything to load on it is maybe about 15 seconds.
Yeah, no, I unfortunately didn't have that playing on PS4. But at the same time, though, the difficulty curve was a bit too cruel, because I wanted to play it for the story. I couldn't give a what's it about the challenge, and it's gotten to the point that I will probably just watch someone's YouTube videos at some point to just finish the story of the game.
I absolutely get that, because I played games where the loading times are just dire, and I don't know if you got as far as the sort of first boss in the mail room.
Oh, I got quite far. I got
right. Okay.
Yeah, I got like probably like maybe about 3/4 of the way through the game.
But yeah, I died about 2 or 3 times on him.
Yeah.
And it was annoying me.
I mean,
and I'm thinking if it was very long loading times in each time, only for you to run into a room and get, you know, get smushed, then yeah.
And that's the thing, like, I don't think, because that was, who was it? Because it's the same lot that did Alan Wake.
Yeah. Remedy?
Yeah, Remedy. And I completed that. Alan Wake was quite hard to play back in the day. He had no funky psychic powers. He had his wits, a light, and a gun sort of thing, if he was lucky. And it's just like, I don't understand making a narrative-driven game that also has really high barriers to entry for playing it. Because I get that there are people who play video games for the challenge of play.
Yeah.
But as a narrative-focused person, unless I'm playing something like Animal Crossing, in which case narrative isn't really an issue for me. But for a narrative-focused game that has like a really decent story, like kind of hiding in there, it's really frustrating if then gameplay gets in the way of me getting near the story. Which is why I appreciate with The Last of Us Part 2 that, of course, I can.
I see what you did.
Yeah, I can scale back the difficulty to like bare minimal kind of, like, it's almost like if I was playing a film. Fine, because I don't care about the challenge for that game. It's the story that I'm worried about. There are some games that I have previously played for the game challenge of it, and it's usually, and it's been stuff like Resident Evil 4, some of the Final Fantasies, but that is usually after I've played quite casually to understand the story. But if you don't get the opportunity to at least get to know the story, that you can then do a replay where you do take on the functional challenge, it's really frustrating.
That to me, yeah, I completely get that. There are games that I've only really enjoyed the second time through and on a harder difficulty setting, because you really understand it by the time you reach the end of the game.
Yeah.
So if you get the opportunity to do a new game plus, it's like, yeah, okay, go on. I understand, you know, the techniques and, you know, how to do the, you know, these bits and, you know, how all this works. So, you know, really enjoy it. But yeah, I get that. I'm thinking one of the last games I remember where the part of the gameplay mechanic was, seemed to be getting in the way of, you know, the story and, you know, the rest of the enjoyment would be Silent Hill 3. Where I felt almost as if the creatures that you had to beat up were getting in the way of the atmosphere.
Well, yeah, because it turned into far more into actually having to kill things rather than dodge stuff compared to the previous two games.
Yeah, and it's, you know, that's fine and everything, but when you're using it just to hold up the player.
Yeah.
Little bit of a pain in the ass, but yeah, I definitely get the, you know, the whole thing with loading times. It's, I've just downloaded it to my Xbox One control, so I'm gonna see what the loading times are like from a hard drive.
I think PS4 was actually meant to have been worse than Xbox One, which was also like
okay,
yeah. PC was, I think, meant to have it best, but yeah. Have you been playing anything else?
I've been dabbling a bit with Tetris Connected, and I've been downloading things because, of course, you know, new console, who dis? So, you know, with Game Pass adding things, I've just been, you know, yeah, I'll get that, I'll try it. But I've mostly just been concentrating on, finishing the LucasArts games and dabbling a little bit with, Control, because he got my attention when it was released, because I like the look of it, but and then he just comes up saying, "Oh, download it on this thing that you've already got." Yeah, okay, I'll be doing that then. Watching wise, have you seen Walking Dead: World Beyond?
Yes, they Paul's watched it more in depth than I.
Yeah,
have.
I've watched first about what 4 or 5 episodes we've got out. We've kind of fell off the bandwagon.
Yeah, is it me, or are they the world's crappest post-apocalyptic teenagers.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the teenagers that have had to grow up in safety.
So, I know, but even so.
Yeah, right. I completely agree with you. I mean, you know, in that compound as well, they would have been basically just kind of constantly learning because there would be nothing else to do.
Carl.
You know, just kind of reading and, you know, Carl. Gaining skills and whatnot.
Carl. And what's his sister's name?
Judith.
Judith. Like, even little Judith would run circle around, circles around those kids. It's like... It's like, what? Even the kids that they found in, was it season 5 of Fear the Walking Dead?
Yeah.
They would run circles around those kids.
It's just, wow, you've learned so much and yet learned jack shit. It's like, come on, I know the whole thing of this is supposed to be like a teeny version of Walking Dead, but I don't think many teenagers like being... you know, portrayed as, you know, a bit useless and crap.
I don't understand how they're going to get many teenagers watching it, because the other two shows that tie into it are very much, even in America, they must be like, what, MA, whatever, like one of the higher, they're going to have a higher TV rating than Supernatural, and that was MA-14 for maturity on the show, if I remember rightly from seeing age ratings for it. Like... how are they going to get teens into something where they've been discouraged a bit from watching the rest?
Yeah, I don't quite get the logic of it.
Because it's the world, like, we'll be on, like, if you haven't watched the main Walking Dead, and even if you haven't watched Fear the Walking Dead or most of it, like, it doesn't make much sense.
Speaking of which, this up to this mid-season break of Fear the Walking Dead, this the season that's just been on, has been rather good.
We have only seen up to the end of season 5.
I think it's season 5, yeah.
Because we always wait for it to be available on Amazon.
Yeah.
Because, quite frankly, what was it? Did BT get the exclusive rights in the UK?
Well, they made a massive deal for AMC content for some weird-ass reason, and it fucked everyone over.
Yeah.
Because who the fuck buys BT for... unless you're a sports nut, nobody buys BT.
Mm.
And I am the exact opposite of a sports nut.
Yeah.
I would... you know, if they offered, you know, you could pay extra and get no sports show up on your guide. So, yeah. I would take that because I am sick of switching over and it's bloody sport. Not going to get into that, though. But yeah, I've liked some of the walkers, or the empties, as they you know, call them, in like the bee or wasp one.
Mm.
That was a nice touch, but generally the thing that I'm taking, you know, away from this so far is two of the characters we're calling young Rosa from Brooklyn Nine-Nine and young Master Frodo. And you know exactly who I'm talking about in this. Yep. But yeah, it's just it's a little bit. I'm not quite sure why you're doing this. This seems like a weird series to do.
I would have preferred a series either set in. Okay, well, they kind of already done Mexico a bit with obviously Fear the Walking Dead.
Well,
but but Canada. I'd like to know what's going on in Canada. Or somewhere.
I would like a European one.
Yeah. Or a European one. I kind of want somewhere like even more remote than they previously had, because like because obviously they probably wouldn't film something that's too abroad, but like somewhere that's like, I know, like either Alaska or like the Yukon or something, you know?
Yeah,
I don't know, because I mean, if you do it too remote, it's like it's not going to actually be believable that there are other survivors around. It's like it's basically just going to be a group of people, presumably, and some zombies.
You could have other tensions develop from that. It doesn't always have to be wall-to-wall zombies. though that is sometimes a good defense tactic in the universe.
Yeah. But yeah, it's just... I can't help but think there are other series like Z-Nation and Black Summer that have done, you know, some of these things better. And Z-Nation definitely with, you know, tongue planted firmly in cheek. Which is sometimes kind of nice. Because, yeah, I understand when some people have, you know, said that some of the Walking Dead plot lines have been quite bleak.
Yes.
So sometimes you need a giant ball of zombies just to...
palate cleanse.
Just to roll through town. Oh, and speaking of lighter things, been rewatching Star Trek Lower Decks.
We still don't have a proper distributor for that in the UK.
So yeah. Unfortunately, I am having to rely on Dave Internet for that, which is just stupid. It is Star Trek. People, you know, I will watch it again on whatever, you know, whatever channel or whatever service buys it. And we still don't have the short treks, which I'm pretty sure I mentioned last time.
Was it we were missing certain short treks?
Yeah, because we bought the DVD and it didn't have the short trek that was actually the prelude to Picard. Which is like,
what the fuck?
Yeah. So basically got short treks, which is short trek season 1 and 2, and it misses out the last episode of season 2.
Yeah, I would love to know what the hell is going on.
I feel like, again, it's all the bloody bullshit between, like, somebody like CBS, whoever the distributor is, and obviously Amazon outside of the US, and just some epic levels of bullshit. And maybe even Netflix a bit, actually, as well, because obviously they did have the shorter treks for season 1, didn't they?
They still do.
Yeah, they still do. So
they didn't have it for season 2 for some reason.
Maybe that was Picard related or for some reason, you know. Like, this is the bullshit. It's like, I feel like people make these media deals and it's like, okay, cool, but do you ever think about how this is going to fuck up your distribution and increase piracy after the product's been made? I feel like they don't think about that at all half the time.
It's especially annoying because have I mentioned the Star Trek podcast, the official Star Trek podcast?
No.
It is rather excellent. I just sort of stumbled, you know, I heard about it and I thought, I will give it a listen. It is co-hosted by Tony Newsom, who plays Beckett Mariner in Lower Decks.
Hmm.
And I've completely forgotten his name again, but he plays Mr. Peanut Butter in BoJack Horseman.
Oh, I can imagine his voice in my head.
Exactly.
Yes.
So the thing is, they know each other. They're friends. So you get a lot of the, you know, the interplay, you know, because they're mates, and they're talking about Star Trek stuff, and they're talking about their own Star Trek stuff, and then they interview other people as well, and it's just this is a really good podcast.
Hmm.
Yeah. So, you know. Been listening to you know, that, you know, which I do heartily recommend. Put it on your podcast things and you can listen to it after this. But they mention that you know, basically, you know, Star Trek stuff is on, you know, CBS All Access or, you know, whatever it's going to be called, with because I heard they were possibly changing the name, but you know. But and it's on you know, such and such a channel on, you know, in Canada, and they basically say the rest of the planet gets it on Netflix.
Nope.
Apart from Star Trek Picard, which is an Amazon Prime, and it's just Amazon.
Speaking of really bad distribution ideas, you hear about, was it you sent us the link about Warner looking to distribute over digitally next year, like,
yes,
all their films on like HBO Max and stuff. And it's like, right, So what about the rest of the world? How are you planning to digitally distribute stuff? Or are you not? And you're just expecting people to go to cinema?
Probably not, because quite frankly, the American media companies kind of don't take into much account like the rest of the world.
Except for China.
Yeah. But I mean, there's a reason why they class it as like domestic box office versus worldwide box office. And they just don't really give a shit about, you know.
But that's stupid, because it, like, that's a population of just over, 360 million versus how many billions?
Yeah, but I mean, when it's on their platform, they get all the ad revenue from...
Yeah, but they could just make that fucking platform available in other territories.
Yeah, they could.
I mean, even if they just said North America and the EU, and
we might not get included in that.
And the really fascist island that's floating off it.
Yeah.
Or EU or European region, and then that covers it. But the EU itself, excluding the UK. has a larger population than America, and large proportions of it are pretty much as affluent. So, it would be a good idea for them to include that with it. But, the rest of the planet. who the hell knows? It would be good if Netflix did it, or... Amazon maybe, but I've got a very strong suspicion that they're going to be flogging it to whatever movie channels. And I don't know the deal with HBO Max, whether it's you subscribe to HBO Max and you get all the HBO Max stuff.
I think it's a subscription thing.
So it's not like pay-per-view.
No. But the thing is that it's like, I mean, we've got access to Sky Cinema if we wanted to like pay on like a film by film basis. But I don't like giving Sky more money than we already do.
No.
It's because I don't like Sky. I think that's all we've got time for this week, guys. So, one film I really would like to see. That I have yet... No, there's two films I really would like to see that I have yet...
Three films.
Is it three films? No, it's two.
Is it Mads Mikkelsen one?
It's Druk, obviously. or Another Round, as it gets called in English-speaking territories. I want to point out that Druk does not translate to Another Round in Danish.
What does it translate to?
I don't know, even though I've been learning Danish for the past, I think, 40 days now. Yehila Emily. Hi. I just said my name is I am called Emily. Hello. Let's get a Danish translator. Danish translate English. Da da da.
It's Google, so watch out.
Druk. Binge drinking. Like, literally, like, the literal translation is binge drinking. It is.
Right.
Yeah. You know,
is that because it's like a shortened version of drunk?
Kind of, probably. And the other film is Freaky.
Oh, yes, that's the...
Which has gone video on demand in the States, as far as I can tell, from last Friday. But the rest of the world, it's still like... And I get that COVID's been a thing this year. But, dear lordy, I would have thought that US companies would be a bit keener on making sure that people could just buy their content, rather than the piracy going on. That doesn't affect Druk, I want to point out, because obviously that's a Danish production. And I think... They have done a couple of limited VOD releases in a couple of territories for it. But, it's like, just... stop making piracy the logical option. That's what I think is what I'm trying to say.
It's basically, the rest of us on the face of this planet, please, he is some money, either directly or indirectly through advertising.
Yeah.
We would like to give you money.
Yeah.
Please give us the opportunity to pay you for this thing.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing with kind of Lower Decks is that, you know, it's not actually been officially announced whether Netflix UK are getting it or whether it's going to appear on Prime or what.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like...
I don't know where to look for it.
Yeah, it's just... It's come on.
But anyway, that's all we've got time for this week. So it's good night from...
It's good night from me, Paul Wood. I'm Retroid on Eurogamer.net and Super Retroid on Twitter.
It's good night from me, Paul Blewett. I'm on Twitter as @PaulBlewett.
It's good night from me, Emily King. I'm on Twitter at EMKingMA. You can find notes for this episode over at www.nerdassemble.co.uk. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at @NerdsPodcast. We're on Facebook as Nerds Assemble Podcast. If you aren't listening already, you can find episodes on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Pocket Casts, and probably a couple of other places where you find your podcasts. I have yet to decide whether or not I'm going to try and move our website over Christmas to its new home. It depends how much I decide I wish to play video games and read versus get elbow deep in the guts of a website.
Just arguing, why don't you just move? Why aren't you working?
It's not terribly reassuring when our like domain provider decided to have an outage the other week. So
yeah, it's like, oh, Emily, have you shared the podcast? No, I haven't. Let's have a look. Why is the website not working?
Yeah.
Hooray. So
that was fabulous. But if you were listening to, because it had already at least been caught by the RSS, so it was available on stuff like Spotify and that anyway. But yeah, it's just like, fuck's sake. Anyway, that's all we've got time for. So good night.
Good night.
Good night. Jokes out of you, I love the break.
So what? What's that from?
Lower Decks.
Yeah.
God, I really need to watch that. Oh, if only there's a fucking legal way of doing it.
Yeah.